Are you or is someone you know a woman? Well, lucky you. Be on the lookout for Catelyn Moran. She doesn't care if women like the word feminist or not.
I think it's just that they literally don't know what that word means. They've just never, sadly, come across me in a bar and said, I'm not a feminist, at which point I would until 2 years ago just kind of grab them by their blouse lapel and go, but you just don't know what that word means. Let me take you through the list, my lady. Were you educated in a school where you were treated equally to the boys in your school? And did you then want to go to university like the boys? And do you vote like the boys? And do you expect to be paid the same as boys? And if, heaven forfend, you were ever sexually assaulted, would you want that to be a crime? And then when they said yes to all of those things, I would say, well, congratulations. Not only are you a feminist, but you live in a feminist world and you've already led the life of a feminist.
Catelyn Moran's with us this hour as we talk about women in America, the almost 51%. Moran is a British journalist and feminist critic. Her latest book is called Moranthology. She talked with Anne Strainchamps about feminism and the futile quest for female perfection.
All that being a feminist means is believing that you are equal to boys. And all the other stuff, kind of, you know, the people who say that they're not feminists, you go, well, what, you know, what do you think a feminist is then? Why are you not a feminist? And they say, well, feminists are angry, they hate men, they will tell you what kind, all these different kinds of feminism, there are loads of rules about feminism, there are loads of things you have to wear if you're a feminist and things you have to have read to be a feminist. And that's just not the case. You know, that's a load of other different feminists' view on feminism, and that's fine. And a creative act that they have committed. You know, they have come up with all their different ideas of feminism. But at root, all feminism means is one simple thing. Do you think women are equal to men?
Well, on the other hand, we get very smart women like the journalist Hannah Rosen saying that the women's revolution is over and women won. So, you know, maybe some American women are right to think that feminism is simply obsolete, you know, that it doesn't apply to them anymore.
The thing is, I mean, if we did a list of the women that had won, I reckon we could probably comfortably fit it on 3 or 4 sheets of A4 paper. I mean, so in terms of global situation, women haven't won. There's that statistic from the World Bank that 99% of the world's wealth is in the hands of men and that only 1% is in the hands of women. That alone tells you that women haven't won. Pay inequality tells you women haven't won. I mean, the thing is, I'm from a Celtic background. You know, I drink a lot. I enjoy as much as anybody spinning a yarn. I like the idea of taking an idea and kind of running with it. And when you hear kind of people going, women have won, what they mean is they've taken a small idea and run with it. Because what they usually mean is in certain industries, traits that we deem to be inherently feminine have become more highly valued than traits we consider to be masculine, i.e. there's a declining industrial base to Western economies and there are more service industry jobs, therefore women have won. Clearly the problems of inequality for women are much bigger than women being able to get, you know, more jobs in call centres than men whose car factories have closed down.
Well, another reason I suppose people could feel that maybe we're past or beyond feminism is that a lot of the more overt forms of sexism have, if not disappeared, they're no longer quite as acceptable as they used to be. You and I are not going to be asked by our bosses to go fetch a cup of coffee. But that doesn't mean that there's not still plenty of sexism out there, does it?
Although you'd be surprised how many women are still asked to go make a cup of coffee. Like kind of when I was writing How to Be a Woman, I went on Twitter and just said, can everybody give me some examples of some sexism that's happened to them recently? And the amount of women who said that it was just presumed that they would make coffee. One woman said that she would never go to work again wearing black and white together because people automatically presumed that she was a waitress.
You're kidding.
And would just automatically stand there with an empty cup sort of expecting to get a refill. There's a Tumblr called Everyday Sexism in the UK to which women post examples of some sexism that have happened to them that day. And the spirit of the Tumblr is one of kind of laughing disbelief. It's not kind of rah, rah, rah. But, you know, some of the instances on there are extraordinary and it gets hundreds of new editions a day. So the sexism is still out there. But, I mean, as I say in the book, it tends to become a lot more disguised these days to the point where I kind of miss the old school sexism sometimes, just that kind of thing of a boss chasing you around the desk. You know, these days it's more likely to be kind of like a sort of a codified sentence or kind of like a sly look or the feeling that the men are just going into the toilets and doing all the real business there and then coming back out again going, well, that's all sorted, ladies. You can all go home now.
The kind of thing where you sort of feel guilty if you name it or call it as sexism.
Yes, just that creeping sense of paranoia, just that kind of, because you never want to be, you know, women don't like to be kind of accused of kind of whining or kind of, you know, or, you know, no one wants to be the do they? No one wants to be the one sitting there going, you're being sexist and I'm at a massive social disadvantage, which has lasted for 100,000 years. That's being Captain Buzzkill. You know, everyone would like it if they could just come in like the Fonz, you know, and be like, hey, I'm a lady, I'm relaxed and I'm equal. But, you know, every so often you do just have to roll up your sleeves and go, you know what? This is nonsense. This is screwing everybody over. I feel oppressed and uncomfortable. And I think often when I kind of talk to women, you kind of go, what is it? How would you define sexism? And sort of often they're reluctant to talk about it. And then you go, do you just spend quite a lot of your time feeling a bit uncomfortable? Do you spend quite a lot of your time just feeling a bit wrong, a bit fat, a bit badly dressed, like you can't really say anything in a meeting, like if you did say something, everybody would laugh at you? If someone said, have we got any volunteers for this task, would you feel uncomfortable about putting your hand up because you thought that you weren't as well qualified as the other men in the room? And most women kind of will go, yep, that's how I feel. It's a sense of feeling slightly wrong. And the thing that I'm interested in that I think sort of feminism sort of needs to tackle and what the feminism that I'm enjoying does is just reclaiming the idea of the word normal. That's where the big battle is now, what the idea of normal is. And until very, very recently, normal was white, straight and male. And still now, when kind of legislation is put into place in the UK, the way that legislation is formulated is that there tends to be, because it's a massively male place, the UK Parliament, is that some new legislation will be come up with, and then they'll take it to a women's committee and pass it over the women just to go, is this sexist or not? And they think that that's a great step forward. And of course, it's better than nothing or being burnt at the stake for, like a witch. But what would be great is if what was normal was that when they're first bolting that law together, half the people in that room are women, rather than simply then passing it past a special ladies committee afterwards. Because at that point, you know that being a woman is normal. At the moment, you have to form a special committee of ladies, which immediately makes you feel not normal. You know, you may as well be a committee of aliens, just going, yes, this doesn't occlude my view of Venus, that's fine.
One of the things I really love about your book is the way in which you take on not just the big issues, you know, pay equity, reproductive rights, political representation, but the ordinary everyday things like what we wear, waxing, you know, these can also be part of a feminist conversation.
Well, these are the things that exhaust you. I mean, it's sort of very difficult to gear up for a massive battle about female genital mutilation and pay inequality and, you know, suffering in the third world when you wake up every day just feeling a bit wrong. Your clothes don't fit. You feel a bit ugly. You feel a bit awkward. You know, you worry about your hair. Days where you feel like you can't leave the house because you feel awful about how you look. And rather than going, oh, just man up and get over it, you know, what makes it easier is if women can talk about that. You go, yes, I identify the fact that, for instance, your underwear is too small and keeps disappearing into the crack in your buttocks and it makes you feel very uncomfortable in public transport. And that is maybe one of the reasons why you haven't yet got around to relieving suffering in the third world.
Can we talk about waxing?
Yes.
Yes, because I'm going to sound ancient, but when I was in my 20s, waxing just wasn't the kind of thing that, you know, middle-class, college-educated young women did. I mean, not if you weren't making a side job in the porn industry. And today, a bikini wax seems to have become kind of the personal grooming standard.
I know, it's absolutely, as women leave the house now on a Friday night for a good night out, it's keys, purse, fully waxed vagina. Okay, I'm out the door, I'm good to go. It is part of the modern woman's survival kit. I mean, I'm the same as you, I'm of a generation where that was never done. Because, I mean, you've got to understand that, like, on the one hand, I'm a strident feminist. I like to be a strident feminist. I've got a T-shirt that says strident feminist on it. On the other hand, I did write a book about feminism simply because I looked around the world and went, wow, most women have much higher standards of grooming than I do. I can either now, age of 37, finally man up and start properly presenting myself as a beautiful and groomed young lady. Or I can just try and make the rest of the world lower its standards to the same terribly trampy standards that I myself have. So when I argue against waxing, you know, a lot of it's, you know, because I just can't be bothered. I think all the best revolutions are essentially formulated by someone standing there going, you know what, I can't be bothered with all of this stuff.
No, but you also have a really good take on or analysis of how waxing, bikini waxing, became kind of the standard for young women today.
Well, first of all, I think that the reason that it's done is because the first time that young men and women tend to see a naked female body is in porn now. This is where over 90% of teenagers get their sex education and see naked people for the first time. And so it's the aesthetics of porn translated into normal life. And that's fine. I don't mind that. What I do mind is the fact that it costs money for women to now have a vagina. You know, in order to feel like you are normal, in order to be like, you know, all the bodies that you see on television and on MTV, the amount of zooming close-ups that I've had at Christina Aguilera's pudenda, which informed me in no uncertain terms that she waxes that area very thoroughly, you know, let me feel that I would not be normal if I didn't wax. And so that's, what, $40 to get it done properly every 6 weeks? You're having to pay a tax on having genitals in a way that men don't. And the catchphrase that I have over and over again in the book is, you know, if you want to know if some sexism is happening, just ask yourselves, is this something the boys are having to bother with? And the boys are most assuredly not having to spend money on feeling normal about a part of their body. And they would laugh at you like we were insane if we suggested that they should.
I guess I was wondering whether, do you have in Britain these young women that we have, you know, articles have been written about them, young women, maybe high school, early college age, who feel this unrelenting pressure to be perfect? I mean, these are girls who seem to be perfect. These are girls who are getting straight A's and they play varsity sports and they're student body president and they spend every weekend volunteering for charity and they're also beautiful. I guess I look at some of that and they feel terrible pressure and I think, when did and how did the message that women can be anything they want become women must be fabulous at everything?
Yes, women must be everything. Now, that's exhausting. I mean, the thing is, we're still experimenting with what we want being a woman to be, aren't we? I mean, you know, for 100,000 years, we've not been, you know, in all of history, we've not really been allowed to experiment with what being a woman is. We've been given very few role models. We've been given very few options. And so with 3.3 billion women in the world, we now ideally need to have it so there are 3.3 billion different ways of being a woman. And at the moment, kind of looking around Western culture, you've probably got about 7 or 8 options tops, one of which is to be a massively, perfectly groomed, fabulous overachiever. When I wrote the book, the idea was, because I know women love self-help books, the idea was for it to be like a self-help book, but instead of sort of telling you a list of things that you had to do, like have colonic irrigation and go on a yogic retreat and kind of write a list of all your best friends' best qualities and then recite it to them whilst holding hands meaningfully, it was just a list of things not to bother with. I think kind of, you know, although women trying hard and striving hard, and God knows I'm a workaholic, is a wonderful thing, there becomes a point where it just becomes neuroticism and you're not really enjoying your life. I'm very, very focused on the fact that that when you die, that's it. You know, I'm sort of very focused on mortality. And so, you know, the one thing that I've tried to inculcate in my own daughters is, you know, bear in mind that this is your only pop at being alive. So spend every day trying to have as much fun as you can and being as pleasant as possible. You know, so that every day you lie down tired, knowing that you've not done anyone any harm and that you've just done, you know, you've enjoyed your life as much as you can, because you could get run over by a bus tomorrow. And they've often said, "Mummy, can you not put us to bed by saying you might get run over by a bus tomorrow? Can you just tell us a story instead?" And I'm like, "No, I'm giving you weapons that will help you in your future lives."
Essayist, critic, and cultural provocateur Catlin Moran. She talked with Anne Strangechance about her book, How to Be a Woman.